Blog Talk Radio.
The extra point is up, and it is good. Welcome to the Extra Points Radio Show. I'm your host, the coach, Keith Howard. Another action-packed one-hour edition. It is the Easter edition. It is the Easter weekend edition. And, of course, with all the Easter eggs and Easter baskets, there is also baseball. There is NBA playoffs. There is NHL playoffs. There is spring football. I've been watching spring ball all week. Love me some spring football. Love it, love it, love it. And then, of course, even our women's team, they kicked off some leagues last week, some weeks this week. So it's a busy time. So make sure while you're getting your Easter basket, you're getting your business of sports on. Speaking of baseball, we got a friend of the show, assistant general manager, Phil Rye, the Bowie Bay Sox. We had a big win last night. Coming in to join us to talk a little bit. Of course, we'll talk Bowie Bay Sox baseball. But I also want to talk to Phil about, you know, young people playing baseball. As I go through and look at some of the major league games, you know, I see that, you know, the demographics are changing. And I want to talk to Phil about that and just see, you know, what's going on in high school? What's going on in the youth league? That it just seems like, you know, the teams, like football, teams are shrinking a little bit. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, Super Referee Craig Muck will come in the second half of the show, and we will discuss all things hoops. But first, you guys know we got to do our PATs. PATs are so easy to get because there's so much going on in the world of sports. And one thing that we definitely could have taken the first 15 minutes to talk about easily is the mess that is the New York Knickerbockers. I mean, what in the world is going on? So the season just ended, right? Season just ended Monday. And those that are making it to the playoffs are getting ready for the playoff series and that. Those that don't make the playoffs are getting ready for the NBA draft and, you know, look at their salary caps, maybe coaching change, this and that. So this guy, Porzingis, who I think is the best player the Knicks have, he skips the exit interview meeting. Nobody does that unless they don't want to be there and they don't want to play there. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, arguably this guy could be the face of the franchise. He tells Phil Jackson, nah, I'm not coming to the exit interview meeting. What do you do with that guy? Now, here's the thing. You've got Carmelo Anthony, in my opinion, an aging Carmelo Anthony. I don't believe he's a starter in the NBA anymore. I think he's a great sixth man, kind of like Paul Pierce was in his last 4 or 5 years. But here's the thing. If you let Carmelo go, which, oh, by the way, Phil said this week, Melo would be better elsewhere. That was his quote. So if you let Melo go, who's the face of the franchise? Porzingis. Well, he's the guy that he left. He didn't come to the exit interview. So if you cut Melo, you're stuck with Porzingis, who doesn't want to be at the exit interview. If you keep Melo, well, then you've got to face the franchise who probably doesn't want to be there either. Say it's a mess. Then let's not even address. That's why I told you I could take the whole 15 minutes talking about the mess that is the Knicks. But whatever happened with Oakley, the big oak tree, whatever happened with this guy threatening the owner and this and that out at the guy. So, I don't know. It's they're a mess, but I'm not going to pick them this week for the PAT, but I easily could have. Here's another one I could have picked. The other night I'm watching the Caps game. I'm sweating bullets because the choking Capitals. I mean, it's just scary. So I said, you know, let me just do a little research for the show and just see, do I have any reason to be afraid? Well, did you know that from 1974 to 1982, the Caps didn't even make the playoffs? That's right. They didn't even make the playoffs their first 8 seasons. And then from 82 to 90, they didn't make it past the second round of the playoffs. So it wasn't really until the 90s that they really started to hit their stride, including the 97-98 season, when they made it to the Stanley Cup. But guess what happened when they made it to the Stanley Cup? You already know. They got swept. They got swept by the Detroit Red Wings 4-0. So, you know, I think I got reason to be afraid, very apprehensive about this team. They have lost to the Penguins or the Rangers over a dozen times in playoff series. Over a dozen times. Guess if they get through the Maple Leafs in the first round, guess who they got in the next round? The Penguins. More than likely, the Penguins. If they were able to get through that, guess who they had? More than likely, the Rangers. So I think Caps fans, I don't see it happening. I just do not see it happening. So, again, could have talked about the Knicks for 15 minutes. Could have talked about the Caps for 15 minutes. Chose not to. Got another great story out there. Becca Longo. You know who Becca Longo is? Anybody know? Raise your hand if you know Becca Longo. Well, she made history this week. Becca Longo is the first woman football player to get a full scholarship. She's a kicker. She got a full scholarship to a Division II school, Adams State. Let me tell you something. It doesn't get any better than that. I knew that day was coming. You know, women are playing football in their own leagues, which I think is great. It's great. I've been a part of it. It's great. Women are refereeing in NFL games. Women are coaching as an assistant for the Arizona Cardinals. So they're breaking down all types of walls. But this D2 thing at little tiny Adams State, she outkicked the boy. And I think that this should be getting more coverage. This is a big deal that this school has said, hey, we're going all out. We're paying for her entire tuition. I think that's a big deal. And I'm going to tell you what, I think she's going to win some games for Adams State. It's no doubt in my mind, no doubt. So could talk about her for an entire 15 minutes. But no, not going to do that either. So we had a lot of stuff to choose. The Knicks, which are an absolute mess. The Caps, choking dogs. And Becca Longo, who's got that scholarship and breaking barriers. But today's a special day and a special PAT. Hit the button. Today is Jackie Robinson Day. At Major League Baseball parks all over the country, everyone's going to be wearing the number 42. And that's a big, big deal. So for those of you that don't know, 7 years before school segregation was considered unlawful, Jackie Robinson was already playing baseball in the major leagues. As a matter of fact, 8 years before Rosa Parks was even heard of, Jackie Robinson was playing baseball in the major leagues. And, oh, by the way, 16 years before the I Have a Dream speech that Dr. King did, Jackie Robinson had already broken down the race barrier to play in the major leagues for the Brooklyn Dodgers, which moved to the L.A. Dodgers. So, in homage and paying the utmost respect, Major League Baseball a few years ago decided to have one day that they would celebrate Jackie Robinson and his great accomplishment. And let's not forget all those around who helped. You know, Branch Rickey, who was the owner of the team, decided to take that chance. He wanted to win so bad he knew he'd get racial backlash, and he signed Jackie Robinson, and it paid off for him. So there's so many people to go around and thank, and it's just amazing to me. In 2016, when our race divisions are as high as I've seen in my lifetime, I was too too young to see it when it was maybe higher. Some 70 years later, we're going to celebrate arguably the jumpstart of the civil rights era. That's not my quote. That's Dr. King's quote. Dr. King actually said it was Jackie Robinson who really was the, I don't know, the ignition that started the car around the civil rights movement and its journey. This one guy, he sacrificed and paved the way for so many. And again, when you look at Major League Baseball rosters and you look at the contracts now that are in the millions, baseball players make more money than any other sport. And quite honestly, they do the least amount of work. Now, their skill arguably is the hardest skill to hit a very small cement-filled ball that's going 100 miles an hour. That eye-hand coordination arguably is the hardest thing to do in sports. I think second is running the 100-yard dash. But here's the thing. When Jackie Robinson signed his contract, and I need to look that up and find out how much that contract was, I can tell you it wasn't $1 million. I would bet, I wonder, was it $50,000? So guys now, Adam Jones, center fielder for the Orioles, I mean, this guy's had a great career, over a 10-year career. He's made hundreds of millions of dollars. Look at McCutchen with the Pirates. Just this year alone, he re-upped for hundreds of millions of dollars. And Jackie Robinson sat in the back of buses, was afraid in his hotel room, got batteries and eggs thrown at him on the road. And this guy, finally, he gets the celebration that's deserved. So all I can say is, if you get an opportunity today, go to a baseball game. Ironically, it's pretty expensive to go to a baseball game, and some people can't even afford it. But if you can get maybe out to a minor league game, head out to the Bowie Bay Sox if you can. We're going to have them on as a guest. Do that. If you can get to a high school game, if you can go play a pickup game, you know what, if you can just go play catch with your son or daughter, if you can do that, I think you're paying the respect of 42. And it's a pretty big deal. So, you know, all I can say is I'm thinking about some of the great ones, right? I mean, and you look at the NFL Hall of Fame, they're great guys. They've done amazing things. And you look at Arthur Ashe. I mean, I think anyone that is a groundbreaking person, I think they are, you know, there should be a Hall of Fame just for groundbreakers. And I can tell you right now that Jackie Robinson would be enshrined immediately to that Hall of Fame. So the pay attention topic this week was very, very easy. I'm going to celebrate Jackie Robinson Day today by going out to the ballpark and looking at all the 42s. And so I hope that you'll join me in that celebration. Can't get to a game, turn it on the radio. There's nothing like AM radio and a good ball game. It's nothing like it. So, hey, I just want to say, to Jackie Robinson, thank you, 42, for all you did for all of us. So, hey, if you got some ideas for pay attention to topics, please don't hesitate to send them out to us. You can send them to my email, which is coach@extrapointsllc.com, or you can send them via Twitter @extrapointsllc. So, hey, I told you we could top the Knicks. We could top the young lady who got the scholarship. We can top the choking caps with Jackie Robinson, 42. So now we're going to take a break. And when we get back, let Phil Rye from the Bowie Bay Sox come in and continue a little baseball talk. And then we'll, of course, have super referee Craig Muckle in to talk all things hoops. So, Chucky, take us away. We'll be right back. We do need money, Chuck. We all need money, money, money. It does make the world go round in our capitalist society. Speaking of money, I guess Phil Rye, Assistant General Manager of Bowie BayStock, is still counting his because we're still waiting for him to join us here on the Extra Points radio show. They had a big win last night out at Prince George's Stadium, beat Harrisburg 3-2. And I know Phil's got another game today at 2:05. I believe we have Phil on the line, though. Let me just see by pressing the button. Phil, are you there?
I am here.
You know what, Phil? I was teasing the audience. I said, I think Phil must be counting money from last night's big win over Harrisburg and getting prepared for today's game at 2:05 versus Harrisburg. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. A little tired here at the end of the first couple of home games. It's always a ramp up to get to opening day, but now we're gonna settle into a little routine. So we're getting ready.
I got you. Well, tell us about those first couple of home games out at Prince George's Stadium and how the team's looking so far.
Well, you know, we've had two home games so far. We've got 9 games in the books. We're in first place right now in our division, which is nice to see. A couple of really fun wins out here at the first two home games. A couple of come from behind wins. Last inning type of heroics. So it's been pretty fun so far, and we're hoping we can continue it this afternoon with a rare Saturday afternoon matinee here. Usually our Saturday games are nighttime, but with the Easter holiday tomorrow, we'll play an afternoon game, and our league actually has an off day tomorrow, so the guys will enjoy a nice early season Sunday off, which they rarely ever get. But the bats are clicking. The pitching's, for the most part, doing pretty well. And, they're getting the job done on the field.
Now, Phil, what do the miners do in celebration of Jackie Robinson Day? I'm going to go out to Nats Park this afternoon for my part of the celebration. What do the miners do? They do anything specific?
Not really. There's not been a carryover from the major leagues to the minor leagues. Some teams will do some different things, individually, but there hasn't been kind of a carryover where, everybody's wearing Jackie's number or anything like that. We've done a few things in previous years here and there, but it's not kind of an overarching thing in the minor leagues as it is in the major leagues.
I got it. And the reason for that question is, one of the things I want to talk to you about today was, I we've had AAU basketball coaches on. We've had AAU or Pop Warner football guys on. What's going on with amateur baseball, the high school level? I remember, I think it was 10 years ago when I was the head coach at Crossland. They struggled to even field a baseball team. I know that there's a Babe Ruth league, but what's going on? Like, is baseball a viable option for someone to go from high school to college and get a scholarship?
Yeah, I think it still is. If people have the skills to do it and put in the time and work with the game of baseball, obviously, I look at it this way, that there's so many other sports and activities out there that are garnering people's attention, that baseball is always talked about as the one that seems to be, declining. But from a spectator point of view, the attendance in Major League Baseball is going up. Obviously, the money that's being spent on Major League Baseball from a broadcasting standpoint and also from a fan perspective is going up. Minor League Baseball as a whole generates over 41, 42 million fans a year, and you're talking about 160 teams across the country and parts of Canada. So there's a lot out there. What I think you're seeing, though, is the talent or the prospective talent in the United States is not what it used to be. And the major league teams and the scouting departments have had to go elsewhere to find and unearth some of the players that you're seeing on those major league fields. For example, the Dominican and Puerto Rico and Venezuela, and you know, even over into Taiwan and Japan and China, and you know, they're looking for anybody that might have a teachable skill that they can bring in to their organization and take a chance on. So there's a lot of money being spent on the international free agents and the signings and things like that. I think that there's a lot of opportunities for kids to play baseball. One of the things that I think, and this is really just my own personal thought as we're talking about this, though, is with less people in the United States playing the game and moving up the ladder into college and maybe semi-pro or minor leagues or things, you're going to have less and less qualified, I think is probably a decent word for it, instructors for the game of baseball. Which that may suffer, because the less that are playing it, the less that are going to be qualified to teach it. And you know, a lot of these sports rely on, you know, the moms and the dads and the people who played it as a kid to teach it. But if you don't play it, it's hard to teach it, because there's so many intricacies in the game of baseball that, you know, if you don't know how to properly instruct a kid on how to pitch, then you're going to get that kid hurt. Or not be able to instruct enough to follow the rules that are out there in Little League baseball and you know, Legion ball and things like that, how often they can throw and how many pitches they can throw, and you know, not throwing split-fingered fastballs and sliders and cutters and, you know, and curveballs at the wrong age. And you really want somebody that knows at least a little bit about what they're doing before they take a kid and coach them. So with less people in the United States playing the game, down the road there's going to be less qualified people to coach the kids that want to play the game. That said, there still are a lot of places to get good instruction and to play. The one thing that suffers in the amateur level, especially when you get to college, is, you know, look at a college football team. There's 90 or 100 scholarship players on that team. Baseball teams get like 11. So there's not many kids that are getting the full ride to college. There might be a half scholarship here, or a three quarter, or a quarter, or a third. You know, the coaches are splitting those up. So to try to field, a college level team, it is getting harder and harder, because the number of scholarships that are there and full rides and things like that for the talented kids. If you get a kid that does get a full ride and they have 11 or 12 scholarship athletes on a baseball team, that's less kids that are going to get the scholarship money. And now they've got to go to a Florida State or a South Carolina or something. And you're talking 30, 40, 50 grand a year at some of these institutions, which a lot of families can't afford. So I think there's a trickle down effect there, but I think that there is an opportunity for.
Let me ask you about your stadium sits in the largest majority county in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sitting here trying to figure out why these high school teams. I know you don't work for the school system, you can't speak for them, but they should be a farm system for you. I mean, you're talking about a sport where you make the most money and arguably do the least amount of work. I could stand in left field like all day and just kind of eat sunflower seeds. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not tackling. I'm not, running all. It's not a heavy lift. Now, the skill is a heavy lift, but the actual work. So, why is that not, and if it is a farm system for you, then correct me if I'm wrong. But I don't believe it is, because they can barely field teams. So how can that be? That, I know we're putting out D1 football players, D1 basketball players, but the Bowie Bay Sox, how many Prince Georgians you got on the roster? I would bet zero. So
actually, it's funny. We actually do have one. We have one Bowie native. Yeah. We actually have three Maryland players. He's born and raised in Bowie. We actually have, it's kind of ironic, but we actually have three players on our team this year that were born and raised in Maryland. One is here from Bowie. One is from the Pasadena area, and the other one is from Dunkirk. So that's very rare, though. Yeah, that's very rare to have three. So it's kind of interesting. The one Ryan Meisinger, who's from Dunkirk, attended Radford University to play. You know, you bring up a very interesting point, and it's one that I've had numerous discussions with. You know, take a look at the major sports. You know, in football, for the NFL, the minor leagues, so to speak, in the NFL are NCAA institutions.
Correct.
When you look at the NBA, the minor leagues, in most respects, is the NCAA. In the NHL, there's a lot of high school or prep school guys that get drafted. Obviously, the draft can be a little bit younger, but a lot of times the colleges or junior programs up in Canada are the minor leagues. I mean, obviously, they have a stronger minor league system with the American Hockey League, but if you've got the talent, you're not going to spend much time in the AHL. The one big difference between those sports is, let's say you're a draft pick in the NFL. You're going to the NFL or you're not going to play. And the money is pretty decent. The same thing with the NHL. When you sign your three-year entry-level contract, you're making about $900,000 a year. And your minor league salary is pretty decent, too. You're making $50,000 to $75,000 a year, which isn't bad. In the NBA, even if you're in the NBDL, which is, you know, if you can play, you're playing in the NBA and you're making millions off the start. But the NBDL is still an upper level. You're making, you know, high five, low six figures. In minor league baseball, when you're drafted, even if you're the number one pick, you're going to go through a progression that's going to take minimum 2 to 3 years, maximum it can take 10 years to have a chance to play in the major leagues. And when you're in the minor leagues, unless you're one of those top couple of round draft picks and made a multi-million dollar signing bonus or high six-figure signing bonus, you're not making a whole lot of money. The average AA player who was drafted by the major league organizations making a couple of $1,000s a month, plus meal money on the road, which is about $30 a day, and they're making that from the time they start the season to the time the season ends, so 5.5 months. And so you're looking at, you know, 10, 12, 15 grand a year for a lot of these players, and for the chance, maybe the chance to go get a cup of coffee in the major leagues and make 1/162nd of the major league minimum, which you know, is $500,000 to $600,000. The economics, when you're looking at it as a youngster, for the chance, now there are less jobs in football than there are, you know, well, there's probably more jobs in football, but, you know, in the NHL and MLB, I mean, there's not a ton of jobs. You got to be one of the best 400 or 500 players out there to make it to the level, even just to have the cup of coffee. So when you're looking at the progression as a youngster, you're looking at baseball and going, man, that's a long road to get to the major leagues. I got to go to rookie ball. I got to go to low A. I got to go to high A. I got to go to double A. I got to go to triple A and beat out all the other guys that are in front of me just to get a shot. Whereas you're a third round draft pick in the NFL. You're going to play in the NFL today. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, it's that system. And guys are getting drafted out of high school and college for baseball. The college guy tends to get progressed a little bit further because they've had, you know, 3 years of college at least. But the high school kid is 17, 18 years old, is going to go through that progression of going levels and sometimes repeating levels. And it takes a while to even maybe get a shot. And in the meantime, you're not making a whole lot of money. So you got to find a way to support yourself and live.
Educate our audience on this. You mentioned that there's a rare couple of guys who go, you know, high school basically right to it. They're gone. I mean, they may make a one stop or two stops on the way. Are there any local guys that, because I'm trying to, you know, picture how good do you have to be? I think I know one guy, but – Are there any local guys, Orioles, Nats, Yankees, whatever, that Mets, whatever, that people would know from name recognition that have that
Bryce Harper
that has had that very fit? Right. Oh, there we go. That was the one guy I thought it was. What was his path?
I mean, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 years old in high school as the next phenom. You know, and for a sport that doesn't get a whole lot of attention, high school baseball, by the national media, he got the attention. You know, he could hit, he could play, and obviously number one pick, got millions of dollars to sign, but he still, you know, he gets signed, and he still goes to low A for a little bit of time. He still goes to high A. He still goes to double A. He still goes to triple A. Now, he did it faster than most players. He only spent a couple of months here and a couple of months there, but they still wanted him to get the seasoning, because the difference between seeing a pitcher pitch in low A versus a pitcher pitching at you at triple A is night and day. I mean, the pitcher in low A is trying to learn to command their fastball. The pitcher in triple A has some major league time, probably has 4 or 5, 6 years experience pitching in professional leagues, pitching against a number of different, you know, types of players and hitters and different situations. Whereas the guy that's in low A, it's his, you know, first, maybe, you know, second year in pro ball. He's just learning how to be a pro and find a routine for themselves for the most part, and working on developing the secondary pitches and things like that. You know, he was so advanced as a hitter and a fielder that, you know, he adjusted to those levels rather quickly to make his debut and to make his mark on MLB. It's very rare nowadays to find the Ben McDonalds of the world who were drafted out of high school and went directly to the major leagues.
I remember him.
It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
Yeah,
you know, there's so much
really
to learn.
Good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but he mm-hmm. didn't last long either.
No, he
you know,
didn't.
There was a guy that pitched back in the mid-2000s for the Boston Red Sox. He came right out of college. His name was Craig Hansen. He was a 98-mile-an-hour throwing relief pitcher, and he went right, you know, I think he had a few games maybe in AAA, and then went right up in a pennant race for you know, for Boston, and was successful right off the bat. But he wasn't to be heard of 4 years later. He struggled and, you know, so a lot of teams are taking the approach now that you're going to go through the progression, and they want you to face a little adversity in the minor leagues to learn how to, you know, if it comes too easy for them in the minor leagues, that's kind of a red flag. You know, it's obviously that they're better than the competition on the field, and that was kind of the case with Harper. But they want guys to go through progressions to learn the different levels, and it's also to learn the players in the system, because eventually those players and things are going to be coming up. Especially, you know, figure a catcher, you know, a catcher like Chance Sisko for the Orioles. You know, he was the youngest player in the Eastern League, our league, last year when he played for us. He turned 21 at the beginning of the season. He's 22 now. He's in AAA. He's the Orioles' number one prospect. But he's also benefiting from catching at the different levels, because he's going to hopefully be the Orioles' starting catcher next year or the year after. And a lot of these players that he's catching, the pitchers that he's catching right now, he's going to be catching in the major leagues. So he's learning them, which is a valuable tool as well. But his, you know, he's got to work on some things behind the plate and defensively, and his bat is ready, according to the scouts. But, you know, there's a progression there. But when you're looking at it from an amateur level, and if you just looked at the major sports, and count MLS in there too. I mean, it's a major sport now. You get drafted or signed, and you go.
What is that?
For the most part, you go right to the show. Whereas in baseball, you've got to go through 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes 10, 12 years to go get your cup of coffee. It's not everybody that goes up and becomes Bryce Harper. Some guys go up for a day and never see the major leagues again. So there is a difference there. Now in baseball, if you make it and you're Bryce Harper, you've got a 15-year career in front of you. Whereas in the NFL, you might have a 2-year career in front of you. So there are different ways to look at it. you know.
I'm going to have a five-minute career. I'm going to have a five-minute career if I don't get Super Referee Craig Buckle in here. But, but hey, Phil, man, I love your passion for baseball. We're going to have you back on next month and just get an update. I know you got a game out there today at 2:05. Any other promotion or anything you want to share with our listening audience that's going on out at the park? I got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, we're off tomorrow for Easter. We're back home Monday through Thursday next week. Lots of things happening at the ballpark. We're just kicking the season off here. It's the 25th season of Bay Sox baseball. We're really excited about that. We've got a lot of things planned all year long, so check us out on baysox.com and see what's coming up. And the weather's been great so far, so we're going to keep knocking on wood and hope it stays that way.
No rain out. Phil, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you down the road.
Sounds good, Keith. Thank you.
Man, I tell you, that guy is passionate about his baseball, and I'm learning a ton of stuff from Phil around baseball. I thought I knew the game, but, you know, not quite. I just don't know. Wait a minute. We got some music going here. That could only be one thing, and we know who that is. Sounds like the crowd is chanting for him. I don't know what all the ruckus is about, but sounds like Super Referee Craig Muckle's coming in. Super Referee Craig Muckle, are you there? Uh-oh. Are you there? Boo that guy. Boo that guy. What is
yes,
going
I
on,
am
man?
Here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We got two Prince Georges back to back here on the show, so Rashern should throw me a bone here. Hey, man.
Yeah.
What in the world? First of all, happy Easter and all that good stuff to you. I should have said that to Phil as well. Hey, what in the world is going on in New York? This is a mess. So this guy, did you hear about this guy, Perzingis, whatever his name is, he blows off the exit interviews with Phil Jackson. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, okay, good morning, happy Easter, and thanks again for having me. And, you know, Phil Rye was a great, I was listening in, so I wanted to just say that. But in any event, I think you know, it's well documented, I'm a Knicks fan, so unfortunately I have to endure this nonsense that we've endured certainly since we've been to the playoffs, which has been about 5 years now. But Porzingis has actually expressed some frustration throughout the course of the season about a variety of things, including how Melo's been treated, you know, the inconsistency with the play of the team and, you know, the offensive and defensive scheme. So I think what you're seeing now is a real manifestation of that frustration in a, you know, in an even more tangible way than, you know, we Knicks fans had heard about it during the course of the season. The fact that your second best player, at least your second best player, in the minds of some, you would say he's our best player now. If he's blown off the exit interview, that should get the attention of management. Because clearly, you don't need a disgruntled superstar, and for all the failures that Phil Jackson has had in management, the fact that he drafted this guy who I did not hear of before he was drafted, we have something here in him. If we were to lose him, that would just tarnish what might be left to tarnish of Phil's reputation. Now,
well. Further, here's the problem, though. In this same week, Phil spouts out some quote about, "Well, Melo's better off elsewhere." So the issue that you have is, if you let him go elsewhere, the guy that's going to be the face of the franchise blew off your exit interview. If you keep him, then the guy that blew off the exit interview, which arguably is your best player, is disgruntled. So what are they going to do with Carmelo Anthony?
That's a great, you know, question. I think at this stage of the game, you know, Phil, you know, this is all about positioning. And I think Phil is just trying to state the case, you know, he thinks Carmelo would move on. Carmelo, if he wanted to move on, Carmelo would, at least during the season, have approved the trade, which he obviously did not do. I do think, though, at this point, Phil's making it very clear that the team wants to move on from Carmelo, and he's, in my mind, and I think the minds of many, trying to force Carmelo's hand by suggesting that, you know, we don't want you, so why do you want to be here? Again,
right.
Not the best way to treat your superstar, insanely loyal to you. And frankly, you know, from a, you know, just if you look at how he's handled his business, I mean, no one would argue that he's disrespected the team in any way. He has been an incredibly good soldier. And so,
well, I don't know. I'd give you some pushback on that. I think he's disrespected his team with his play. This guy's lethargic out on the court. He doesn't run back. He throws up shots, misses them, doesn't run back, doesn't play defense, doesn't rebound. I think he dissed the Knicks every time he steps on the court with his lackluster play. Now, I do think that he's still got some in the tank, and I do think, like Paul Pierce or someone like that, if he got on with a contender and was the sixth or seventh guy, I think you would see some energy. But I've watched him real closely this season. There hasn't been a lot of energy, and quite honestly, I want to go fight the owner over it. Oh, wait, that's another issue. Whatever happened with the whole Oakley piece and the owner and all that, I mean, this place is a mess. Here's the question for you. What do they do? Are they going to make a coaching change? Is this a front office change? Or will they just deal with the Melo Porzingis player level changes?
Well, the one thing that in that whole equation that you did not mention is the fact that just this week, the moment the season was over, basically James Dolan and Phil agreed that they would accept the option that they had for two more years of this. So Dolan has basically said, Phil, you're the guy for the next 2 years. So let's start with that.
Okay, I missed that. That's why you're super ref. I missed that one.
Yeah, and that's important because, you know, for us Knicks fans, we were hoping that we could have Phil basically walk away or get fired, be told to walk away, so we could start over. So to answer your question, I don't think that Hornacek will get fired. And, you know, in fairness to Jeff, he did a pretty decent job under the circumstances. And I'll say, when they announced him as a candidate, I wasn't necessarily feeling it, although there were probably worse choices, but there were certainly potentially better choices. But, you know, he's been fine, but Phil, I think, is still driven to get his triangle offense in there. And, you know, he thinks that Melo is I think we can all agree, though, that Carmelo is not Michael Jordan. Carmelo is not Scottie Pippen. So it's probably, you know, unless Phil's got some plans under wraps that he's not divulged to the world yet, I don't see where that's going to come from in the next couple of years. So I think New York is going to be looking like this, unfortunately, for the next couple of years, which is a shame.
Well, no, it's not a shame because you're right here in the capital of the free world, and you can root for our hometown Wizards. So tell me about these Wizards now. They got the Hawks. Now, I know in the regular season they were 3-1 against the Hawks, but all those games were – one was a real blowout, but the other ones were real, real tight games. I don't think they walk through and just sweep Atlanta. I think this is going to go 6 or 7 games. Your thoughts?
No, I would agree. I mean, unless you are the Cleveland Cavaliers or possibly the Boston Celtics, you know, I would suspect most first-round matches are going to be fairly hotly contested. I think the Eastern Conference is far more competitive, you know, in the playoff round than the Western Conference will be. So I do think the Wizards will, you know, have to pretty much be on their A game for most of the series against the Hawks. You know, the Hawks have a pretty good team. I mean, you know, Paul Millsap. And I'm going to have a brain cramp here with some of their other guys, but you know, they've done a nice job, and they started playing better at the obviously Dwight Howard's down there. He's going to be a presence on the inside, and I think he's played generally pretty well this season. So the Wizards will have a tough one. I do think, though, you know, they do have Beal and Wall in the backcourt. They're certainly among the better backcourts in the Eastern Conference. So if they're both on their game and they're able to defend, then the Wizards should move on to the next round. You know, and when you're top, when you're top three or four, you're kind of expected to move on anyway.
Unless you're in D.C. You spoke about defense, and this Kelly Oubre has all of a sudden emerged as a real stopper of the other team's scorers, and that he wasn't that way when he was at Kansas. He was a scorer himself. What do you think about this Wizards bench? I mean, they got a couple guys from overseas who can shoot real well, made big splashes, haven't heard much since. They don't play any defense. They got a big guy that's heard Menominemin or whatever his name is. So Oubre is really kind of that guy that's supposed to shut down a Millsap or shut down, whoever the scorer is. Can this Wizard bench give anything?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The NBA playoffs, more than any other playoffs probably, maybe with the possible exception of the NFL, is all about matchups. And you're going to find that there's going to be somebody on somebody's bench, a player on somebody's bench, who you probably haven't heard of in the regular season, all of a sudden becomes well-known in the playoffs. For whatever reason, maybe they come off the bench and all of a sudden they find their shot, or they're defending that person. So Kelly Oubre could be that X factor that you see, in this series and possibly beyond if they get past the Hawks. So the benches are important, but the Wizards have done a pretty good job of augmenting the bench over the course of the last couple of years. So I would give them the edge over the Hawks. I think the Hawks hurt themselves when they traded Kyle Korver away to the Cavaliers. I'm not quite sure what that was about. I thought the Hawks were kind of giving up with that one. But
yeah, I did too. That was crazy. That was a head scratcher.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that's just one less scoring option that the Hawks have. The Wizards, frankly, won't have to worry about. So I would say for Kelly Oubre, he'll play a role. Gortat should still play a role for them as well. Scott Brooks emphasizes defense. He'll find somebody. You got these 3 days that, today's obviously the first day of the playoffs. So these coaches take advantage of the days they have to really start breaking down and look where they can exploit weaknesses of the other team.
Now, you mentioned that the East is going to be real tougher than the West. I would agree with you on that one. But out in the West, there's a guy who is just making all type of historic numbers here in Westbrook. Is he the MVP of this league, or is it James Harden? Is it, arguably the second greatest player of all time in LeBron? Is it John Wall? Who's the MVP of this league?
This is probably the first year in a long, long time where you would really have a case for, five to seven players being the MVP. And I think, in my mind, the MVP is most – I always view the MVP as who is the most valuable to their team. I don't look at it as, who's the best player in the league. Because I look at if that player was not on that team, where would that team be without that player? And I would say Kawhi Leonard, who I do love, the Spurs would still probably be in the playoffs without him.
Sure.
I would say, though,
the Wizards would still be in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say take Westbrook off the Thunder. They're not a playoff team as I see it. I would say Harden, although the Rockets moved him to point guard and he's played incredible this year. I still think the Rockets probably make the playoffs, but I think in my mind, there's no way the Thunder make the playoffs without Russell Westbrook. So that
you say Cleveland makes it without LeBron?
One could argue that they might not, because they haven't played. They've struggled you know, this year. And I think, you
I mean,
know,
Love's been hurt, right? Love's been hurt. Korver
yes,
didn't get until halfway through the season. So, you know.
Irving.
I think maybe, yeah, Irving,
yeah.
you know, seeing ghosts
yeah.
and
so,
that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think the sheer numbers. I like the way you do it, by the way, which is most valuable to the team, not necessarily league statistics. But these league statistics that Westbrook has made are historic. I mean, when you start
yeah.
saying Oscar Robertson and Wilt and Kareem, you know, this is different deal here.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, look, triple doubles, you average a triple double for the season, that is impressive. And so in my mind, I mean, and going back to your point about LeBron, the Cavaliers probably don't make the playoffs without him. So I think using my interpretation, my view of the world, it comes down to Westbrook and LeBron. And I think if you want to take it to your point, Westbrook has had the better year. And I say that with no disrespect to LeBron because he is, you know, he's LeBron. And, you know, his resume is unquestioned. But I think Westbrook, if he proved – if we knew his value when KD was at Oklahoma City, he took that value and increased it exponentially since KD has moved on to Golden State. So I would give it to Westbrook for no other reason that if he doesn't win it this year, when is he going to?
Right. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. We got about 3 minutes, Extra Points Radio Show, Super Referee Craig Muckle. You mentioned playoffs. There was a playoff last weekend in a different sport. There was a playoff in a little championship they called the Masters. And, you know, they went a couple extra holes. But it's a perfect segue to you got a big event coming up. I think it's coming up next month. Tell our listening audience all about it.
Yeah, it's the Prince George's Chamber SHE Committee. SHE is Sports, Hospitality, and Entertainment Committee golf tournament. And this is our, you know, fifth year of the golf tournament. We will be at Oak Creek Golf Course in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. It's our first year at Oak Creek, and we're looking forward to being there. The staff at Oak Creek has been fantastic working with us and, you know, preparing to roll out the red carpet for us. So we're a little more than, you know, a month away from it. Our date for that is May 17th. So, you know, we're looking at, 32 days from today. And, you know, we've had a lot of support, sponsors coming on board. You know, Washington Gas is one of our sponsors. I know I'm going to screw this up, but by not mentioning everybody because I don't have my list in front of me, my roster, but we've had great support from, you know, the business community, and we're looking for people to come out and, you know, join us because this is an opportunity for us not to only support the chamber, but also to support young people at Prince George's Community College who are in the hospitality program because, you know, those are folks that hopefully will want to stay here in Prince George's County and work at our vast array of hospitality amenities you know, that we have here. So
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the other thing I'll just say, if you're into golf, we certainly want you to come out. And you don't have to be an expert because I own a set of clubs, but I'm a bowler. So, and there's a distinction between being a bowler and owning a set of clubs or owning a set of bowling balls. But even if you're not a golfer, and you don't even own a set of clubs, but you're interested, we're also going to have a golf clinic that morning. So come on out and learn a little bit about the nuances of golf and, you know, see if you know, your interest is piqued enough to maybe at least buy a set of clubs and to go out and, as I like to call it, do some landscaping.
I like that, landscaping. I like that. Super Referee Craig Muckle, always a pleasure, man. We will see you down the road.
Well, thanks for having me again. Happy Easter to you and everyone else.
Take care. Super Referee Craig Muckle. So let's get our quick 2-minute warning, and it's pretty easy today. It's April the 15th. 70 years ago, Jackie Robinson broke the color line. Thank you, Jackie Robinson. Thank you, 42. Predictions. We took off last week from our predictions. We are 22 wins and 22 losses. So we're going to go with the Wizards over the Hawks in game one of the NBA playoffs. The Caps over the Toronto Maple Leafs in game two of the NHL playoffs. Bowie Bay Sox will beat Harrisburg today in games at 2:05. Go to BowieBaySox.com for details and tickets. And I got the Nets over the Phillies today, and I'm even going to predict the score 4-2, 42. If you want to find out more about Extra Point LLC, visit us online at Extra Point, www.extrapointllc.com, as well as you can reach us on Twitter at Extra Points LLC. And if you're looking for someone to motivate, inspire, and engage your teams, I would love to speak to them. So book me to come out and motivate and inspire your team. And speaking of book, we've got two things going on. First of all, the book is on sale at the website, www.extrapointsllc.com. And we are looking to donate 100 books to kids all over the country. And so we are looking for donations. You can, for $10, you can donate the book, and we will make sure that it gets to a young person in the United States. So if you want to donate, go to extrapointsllc.com. Next week, we're looking for another exciting show, probably keep our baseball trend as we want to keep up with our Nets and Orioles, Bay Sox, and all the other teams that are around. There's some minor league teams out in Virginia we want to talk to. Of course, the women's tackle football season is underway. We want to make sure we give them some shine. And, hey, we just want to make sure that each and every one of you have a great, great Easter weekend. And as always, the Extra Point, it's up, and it is good.
Has the extra point.